Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789 in Texas, that same number. Sandy Williams is here, as always, on Mondays and Fridays. Today is Monday. Or is it Friday?
It's Monday.
Oh, it's Monday. Okay, it's Monday. If you say so. Sandy, Ukraine is still in the news and a little bit more now than it was. There's some things going on internally in Ukraine. And, you know, you wanted to talk about the fact that there are some folk inside Ukraine who don't agree totally with Zelensky.
Well, apparently, I mean, Zelensky announced that he was essentially firing the head of the security and a whole bunch of other of essentially almost cabinet-level people for collaboration with the Russians. And of course, the Zelensky government and the Western press is covering this as if these people are traitorously acting against the Ukrainian interest, which apparently they might be. But the question really is, are these people evidence simply of traitors within a government for a country that is unanimously backing Zelensky and in the position of Ukraine against Russia? Or are these people evidence that there are, in fact, within Ukraine, a number of very influential people, as well as maybe they represent a substantial number of Ukrainians, who are not sympathetic with the way Zelensky is handling things and might be closer to sympathetic with the Russian position, which is the way Russia would present this. So the Western press covers this one way. I'm confident that the Russian press is covering this as further proof that there are many, many supporters within Ukraine of the Russian position against the Zelensky government. And where is the truth in that situation? I mean, the fact is that over the past while, Zelensky has uncovered a substantial number of collaborators. And whether they're called collaborators, sympathizers with Russia, or traitors is a question of vantage point.
You know, Sandy, we can, you know, Zelensky's the hero now. Prior to this war, weren't a lot of people who really even knew who Zelensky was. And the way he came into power, having been a comedian and not having a whole lot of history with the government and all those types of things, and the battle that he's waged, and so people are now, when they look and see Zelensky, they see just a great warrior, but. When you don't have a history or of that nation and insight on its war machine and all of those things, you gotta kind of figure Zelensky's still kind of a novice at this.
Well, he might be politically savvy, but you have to understand that the domestic politics of Ukraine might be quite complicated, and apparently they were. There is a strident right-wing conservative side that is very nationalistic and very apparently aggressive. And that is part of the Zelensky wing of government. He represents a center-right government, and maybe it's a right-of-center government. And so he has to listen to those supporters. It is understood by many that Zelensky was potentially willing to negotiate with Putin before the invasion at the time they surrounded. And, however, there were significant portions of his right-wing government that said, no way, you can't do that. Now that this war is ongoing, I'm confident that there are at least some in the government, as well as many in the populace, who might want at least there to be negotiations ongoing towards a settlement of the war. And there is some intelligence that leads people to believe that it is at least as much Zelensky, who's refusing to negotiate, as it might be the Russians, with Zelensky believing that with the development of more armament from the West and stronger military capacity by on the part of Ukraine, that they will improve their negotiating position for a peace. And so there's much bloodshed, and there's much Ukrainian treasure and blood that's being spent now based on the policies of Zelensky in terms of continuing the warfare with Russia and continuing the defense, rather than negotiating potentially towards a peace which might be no different than the peace that he could have had earlier, which, as I've said, was the Donbass region being redefined, a recognition of the Crimea annexation, and an announced long-term neutrality for Ukraine. And you know, maybe these collaborators are simply people who are strong disbelievers in the policy being pursued by Zelensky of continued warfare.
Well, you know, that continued warfare is...
I mean, it is a defense, and I understand that it's continuing warfare from the standpoint of defending your country is different than continuing warfare in an attack on another country. But the process of negotiation takes two to tango, and it could well be that there's a lack of cohesion on the part of the Ukrainian people, but also some significant political and government participants on the issue of just what and how negotiations should run.
Well, you know, Sandy, there was, and I'm looking for it. I had it earlier, but I don't know it. It kind of disappeared, but what it was really talking about was that the article, and I forgot where I had it, was talking about what may be the final decision on this war, and that this winds up like the Korean War, where there's a North Korea and a South Korea, right. But this split and divide with Crimea, I mean with Russia and Ukraine.
Right, right. That split is basically eastern Ukraine, meaning the Donbass, being on the Russian side, and western Ukraine remaining as the independent Ukraine that is under the Zelensky government now, and Crimea being a continued part of Russia.
Well, actually, here it is. Russia and Ukraine bound for Korean War ending. And so when you talk about Korean War ending, former NATO Supreme Ally Commander James Stavridis said Sunday that the Russian-Ukraine war will likely end in 4 to 6 months. And have a resolution similar to the Korean War in the 1950s.
Interestingly, the Korean War never ended. The resolution that resolved the Korean War created the boundary between North and South Korea, but there was never a peace signed. And that's one of the problems we have ongoing with Korea, is that we have the strange armistice that was signed. There was never a peace. And the problem with that outcome from the standpoint of settlement is that if we have that kind of a settlement, we have no end to the sanctions. And the sanctions do threaten NATO continuity to some extent. There's already, today I heard news that there were a number of turbines that were necessary for this Nord Stream, this pipeline that runs from Russia, the gas and oil pipeline. It's been shut down for 10 days for maintenance. One of the reasons it has been is that Siemens Company, which is a German company, which has built the turbines that are used and lie in the Russia, in Russia, for partially in Russia at least, for creating the pressure that is necessary to move the water, the gas and oil from Russia to Europe, are in need of maintenance. And the sanctions had kept the parts from being shipped to Russia. And so that was causing this 10-day shutdown, and Europe is worried about the 10-day shutdown being made permanent, and then they've got no gas and oil coming from Russia, which turns out to be a serious problem. And so most recently, there's been some exceptions made to the sanctions. Equipment has been shipped to Canada, where there is a Siemens plant that can repair them, and they're doing emergency repairs. So there's already some breaks in the unity here.
All right, gotta go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back.